Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
A werewolf romance written by Georgina Anderson. Prologue. I died the moment I opened my mouth to sing. Not the kind of death where your heart stops and the world goes black. No, this was worse. This was the death of everything that made me me. Every thread that connected me to the forest. Every whisper of wind that carried secrets. Every heartbeat of the earth that sang through my bones. I felt it all rip away as the final note left my lips, as golden light poured from my mouth like my soul was spilling out onto the blood-stained ground, and in that terrible, beautiful moment as I collapsed beside the small wolf cub, whose chest finally rose with breath, I understood what it meant to sacrifice everything. The Alpha King found me there, pale as moonlight, barely breathing, cradled in his son's tiny paws. He looked at me, this dying, colorless girl, and heard a symphony. The song that had haunted his dreams for years. The melody that had been the only warmth in his frozen heart. And he didn't even know my name. But let me start at the beginning. Let me tell you how a mute healer, who was never supposed to matter, became the one thing that could save a dying kingdom. Let me tell you about the song I should never have sung. Part 1. The silence before the storm. My name is Alara, and I have been silent for 15 years. Not by chance. Not by tragedy in the way most people understand tragedy. By choice. A choice I made when I was 7 years old, and a malevolent spirit with eyes like oil slicks and a voice like shattered glass came for me in the night. It fed on magical voices, you see. Children born with the gift of speaking to nature. Of singing the old songs that could heal wounds and coax flowers from frozen ground. We were delicacies to it. I still remember my mother's scream cut short. Still remember my father's desperate hands pushing me toward the root cellar. Still remember the choice I made in that darkness. Lock it away. Lock everything away. Or let the creature consume not just me, but the entire lineage of magic that ran through my blood. So I swallowed my voice. Pushed it down so deep that it couldn't be heard, couldn't be sensed, couldn't be stolen. I made myself a void. The spirit moved on, searching for easier prey. My parents were already gone, and I became the mute girl who survived. 15 years I've lived with this choice, and not once have I regretted it. Not even when the villagers of Silver Vale look at me with barely concealed disgust. Not even when they mutter cursed and wrong as I pass. Not even when children throw stones and adults refuse to trade their bread for my healing salves unless they're truly desperate. Because I am alive. And my magic, though silent and locked away, still pulses beneath my skin like a second heartbeat. I just can't share it the way I was meant to. The packlands of Silver Vale have been dying for 3 years. I've watched it happen slowly. Like watching someone you love waste away from a sickness you can't name. The forests that used to hum with life have gone quiet. Not the peaceful quiet of winter sleep, but the terrible quiet of held breath. The animals are skittish, their eyes too wide, their movements too sharp. Even the ancient oaks that have stood for centuries seem to lean away from the castle at the heart of the territory, as if the very stones there emit some kind of poison. The villagers blame their Alpha King, Kaelin Stormcrown, though they only whisper it. They say his heart turned to ice 3 years ago when his mate was murdered. They say he feels nothing now. No joy, no sorrow, no rage, nothing. They say he rules with cold efficiency, that he's more machine than man, more weapon than father. They say his young son, Lior, has stopped speaking entirely, that the cub wanders the castle halls like a ghost, overwhelmed by emotions he can sense but cannot understand, drowning in the pack's collective anxiety and his father's vast, terrible emptiness. I know what it's like to choose silence as survival. I wonder if anyone has asked Lior what he's surviving. The harvests have been failing. The winter has been crueler. The rogues at our borders have grown bolder, sensing weakness. And the pack, once legendary for the depth of their bonds, the strength they drew from each other, has become fractured, isolated, afraid. I live on the outskirts of it all, in a small cottage at the forest's edge that my parents left me. I gather herbs and roots, make my salves and tinctures, and leave them at the village healer's door with written instructions. Sometimes she uses them. Sometimes she claims credit for the cures they bring. I don't care. The healing is what matters, not the recognition. At night, alone in my cottage with only the fire for company, I let myself remember what it was like to sing. I don't dare open my mouth. The fear is too deeply rooted, the childhood terror too vivid. But I remember the feeling of magic flowing through me, of being part of the great web of life that connects all living things. I remember belonging. Now I belong nowhere. That's what I'm thinking on the day everything changes. I'm kneeling by the stream that runs past my cottage, filling my water skin, when I feel it. A disturbance in the forest, like a stone thrown into still water. The ripples reach me as wrongness, as pain, as fear so sharp it makes my teeth ache. Something is hurt. Something young. I don't think. I just run. The forest opens before me like it hasn't in years, branches pulling back, roots smoothing flat. Even silent and locked away, my magic recognizes urgency. The trees themselves are afraid, and they're pointing me toward the source. I find him in a small clearing, maybe half a mile from my cottage. A wolf cub, no more than a few months old, his silver-white fur matted with blood. 3 massive wolves circle him. Rogues, I realize with a jolt of terror. Their eyes are wrong, filmed over with a sick yellow sheen, and their movements are too coordinated, too purposeful. This isn't a random attack. This is a hunt. The cub, and gods, he can't be more than a baby, tries to bare his teeth, but the sound that comes out is a whimper. His left front leg is mangled, bent at an angle that makes my stomach turn. He's losing blood fast, his small sides heaving with panicked breaths. And I recognize him. Even though I've never seen the Alpha King's son, even though he's never been brought to the village, I know. I know it in my bones, in the way the forest itself seems to hold its breath around him. This is Lior, the cub everyone whispers about, the empath who stopped speaking, the heir to Silver Vale. The rogues haven't noticed me yet. I'm downwind, and I've always been good at making myself unnoticeable, at becoming part of the background. I could slip away. I could run back to my cottage, bar the door, and pretend I never saw this. Lior's eyes find mine across the clearing. They're his father's eyes, storm gray, old beyond their years. And in them, I see something that breaks my heart. Resignation. He doesn't expect to be saved. He doesn't expect anyone to help him. He's just a baby, and he's already given up. The largest rogue lunges, jaws open wide. I'm moving before I can stop myself, before I can think about what this means, what I'm about to do. I throw myself between the rogue and the cub, and I open my mouth, For the first time in 15 years, I sing. Part 2. The Breaking. The song that comes out isn't voice, not exactly. It's light. Pure, golden light that pours from my mouth like dawn breaking, like honey, like every sunrise I've ever witnessed condensed into sound and color. The magic I've kept locked away for so long erupts from me in a torrent, and it's agony and ecstasy and homecoming all at once. The rogues recoil, yelping, pawing at their eyes, but I barely notice them. All my focus, all my being, is on the small, broken cub behind me. I sing a healing song, one my mother taught me before I lost her. It's in the old language, the one that speaks directly to the soul of living things. I don't know if I'm singing it correctly. It's been so long, and my voice is raw and unpracticed. But the magic knows. The magic remembers. Golden threads of light spin out from me, wrapping around Lior like a cocoon. I feel the song pulling from somewhere deep inside me. Somewhere I didn't know existed, pulling not from my lungs or my throat, but from the very core of what makes me me, my essence, my soul. The cub's leg begins to straighten, the bones knitting together with soft, clicking sounds. The gashes in his side close, fur growing back silver and perfect. His breathing steadies, deepens. The pain leaves his eyes, replaced by wonder, by peace. By something he's clearly never felt before. Pure, selfless, unconditional love. But I can feel myself unraveling. Each note I sing takes something from me. Not just energy. I could handle exhaustion. This is different. It's like watching colors drain from a painting. Like feeling warmth leave a room. Like losing pieces of yourself you didn't know you could lose. The connection I've always felt to the forest, faint as it's been, starts to fray. The whisper of the wind that I could just barely hear goes silent. The heartbeat of the earth beneath my feet stops. I'm being severed from the world. But Lior is dying, and I can't. I won't. Stop. The largest rogue shakes off the light's effects and charges again. I don't have enough magic left to stop him and heal the cub. I have to choose. There's no choice. I pour everything I have left into Lior, into knitting him back together, into filling him with enough life and strength to survive. The song reaches a crescendo, and the light becomes blinding, and I feel the final thread snap. The thread that connects me to my magic, to the voice that was always supposed to be my gift, my purpose, my soul. It pours out of me in one last golden wave, and then it's gone. I collapse beside Lior, and the world goes gray. Not dark. I can still see. Still hear. But it's muted now. Distant. Like I'm experiencing everything through thick glass. The warmth is gone. The connection is gone. I'm just a body. Just flesh and bone with nothing luminous inside. The rogue's jaws close on empty air where I was a moment ago. Because suddenly, there are new wolves in the clearing. Massive, battle-scarred warriors, wearing the mark of the King's Guard. They tear into the rogues with brutal efficiency, and I watch it happen with detached curiosity, like I'm watching a play. Everything feels so far away now. Lior nuzzles against me, whimpering, but I can barely feel it. His small body is warm, his fur is soft, but the sensations reach me as facts, not experiences. He's glowing. Still glowing with the magic I gave him, lit from within like a tiny sun. And I'm so cold. The cub is here! He's alive! Voices urgent and relieved, footsteps thundering toward us. Strong hands checking Lior, marveling at his healed body, demanding to know what happened. I try to tell them, try to write in the dirt, but my
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Fingers won't cooperate. Everything is shutting down, one system at a time. My heart is still beating, but slower now. Slower. Slower. This is what it feels like to die, I think distantly. Not the violent end I expected, but a gentle fading. Like a candle burning down to nothing. Lior won't leave my side. He's making sounds I don't understand, pressing against me, trying to share the warmth and life I gave him. Trying to give it back. Where is she? Where is my son? The voice cuts through the gray fog like a blade, sharp, cold, and absolutely commanding. Every wolf in the clearing immediately drops into submissive postures, even the ones still finishing off the rogues. The Alpha King has arrived. I can't see him clearly. My vision is tunneling, going soft at the edges. But I sense him, a massive presence moving through his warriors like a winter storm, all deadly grace and controlled power. Here, Your Majesty. The cub is unharmed, more than unharmed. He's been healed by... Explain. It's not a request. I hear fear in the guard's voice as he stammers out what they found. Lior surrounded by gold light, the dead rogues, and me. Some human girl barely breathing, but the cub won't leave her. Silence. The kind of silence that makes even the wind hold its breath. Then footsteps, slow and measured, approaching where I lie in the grass with Lior curled against me. I feel the weight of his gaze before I see him. Alpha King Kaelin Stormcrown kneels beside us, and for a moment, just a moment, I can see him clearly through the fading gray. He's younger than I expected, maybe late 20s, with dark hair that falls over his forehead and those storm gray eyes that Lior inherited. His face is carved from marble, beautiful in the way a statue is beautiful, perfect and cold, and utterly devoid of emotion. He looks at Lior, and there's a flicker of something, relief, maybe, or satisfaction, that an asset has been preserved. Clinical. Detached. Then his eyes move to me, and I watch something impossible happen. His face doesn't change. His body doesn't move. But his eyes go wide, just slightly, like he's been struck, like the ground has vanished beneath his feet. He's staring at me, through me, and his hand comes up slowly, like he's reaching for something he can't quite believe is real. His fingers stop inches from my face, trembling. You, he whispers, and his voice is raw, broken, nothing like the cold command from before. It's you. I don't understand. I've never met this man. I've never even seen him before today. Why is he looking at me like I'm a ghost? Like I'm an answer to a question he's been asking for years. He leans closer, and suddenly he's not a king anymore. He's just a man, desperate and lost and terrified, in a way that has nothing to do with his son's near death. The song, he breathes. You're the one singing in my dreams. For 3 years, every night, I've heard. His voice cracks. It was you. All this time, it was you. His hand finally touches my face, and the moment his skin meets mine, I feel it. A surge of something that breaks through the gray fog like lightning. Warmth. Connection. Recognition so deep it doesn't need words. His wolf. I can sense it now. A feral and broken thing that's been chained in darkness, surges forward with a sound that's not quite a growl and not quite a whine. It's yearning. It's desperation. It's the sound of something that's been dying of thirst, finally finding water. And then the melody floods through me, through both of us. The song I just sang, but also other songs, older songs, songs I've never consciously learned, but that live in my blood. They pour from the place I kept them locked away, and even though I can't sing them anymore, even though my voice is gone, he can hear them. He can hear all of them. Who are you? He asks, and there are tears on his face now, cutting tracks through the cold marble mask. What are you? I try to answer, but nothing comes out. Not sound, not light, nothing. The magic is gone. The voice is gone. I'm empty. His face crumbles as he realizes what I've done. His eyes scan the clearing. The healed cub, the dead rogues, the golden light still fading from the air. And he understands. I can see the moment he understands. No, he says softly. No, you didn't. You couldn't have, for a stranger, for a cub you didn't know. His hands cut my face, and they're shaking. Why would you do this? Why would you sacrifice everything? Because he needed me, I want to say. Because he's just a baby. Because no one else was going to. But I can't say anything at all. Lior whimpers and pushes his small head under Kaelin's hand, then presses it back against me, trying to bridge us, trying to make his father understand. And Kaelin does. I see the realization wash over him, see him finally look at his son, really look, for perhaps the first time in 3 years. See him recognize the peace in Lior's eyes, the calm, the healing that goes far deeper than closed wounds and straightened bones. She gave you more than her voice, Kaelin whispers to Lior. She gave you what I couldn't. She gave you peace. The gray fog is closing in again. It's so much darker now, so much colder. I'm so tired. Kaelin's voice becomes urgent. No, stay with me. Stay! He pulls me into his arms, and I'm weightless, boneless, barely here. I don't even know your name. You have to stay. You have to! Lior makes a sound, urgent and distressed, and suddenly I feel it. A warmth spreading from the cub through Kaelin into me. They're trying to give back what I gave. The magic. The life. The light. But it doesn't work that way. What's gone is gone. Someone get the healers, now! Kaelin's roar shakes the trees. And someone tell me who she is. No one knows, Your Majesty. She lives alone in the forest. The villagers call her the Mute. She has a name. The fury in his voice could level mountains. Find it. And someone get my healer now, or I will personally rip apart every single one of you. The world is fading to black now, the gray giving way to nothing. But through it all, I can still feel his arms around me, can still feel his heart thundering against my cheek. Don't you dare, he's whispering into my hair. Don't you dare leave. Not now. Not when I finally found you. Please. Please. And I want to stay. Gods, I want to stay so badly. But I'm so tired, and the darkness is warm, and the pain is finally, finally gone. The last thing I feel before everything goes black is his hand in mine, squeezing tight, and his voice, broken and desperate, speaking words I can barely hear. I need you. Then nothing. Part 3. The Awakening. I dream in silence. For 3 days, they tell me later. I float in darkness. No sound. No light. No sensation. Just the void I created when I locked my voice away all those years ago. Expanded now to encompass everything I am. But it's not entirely empty. Sometimes, in the deepest part of the dark, I feel warmth. Pressure on my hand. A small body curled against my side. A deep voice speaking words I can't quite catch, telling me stories, asking me questions, begging me to come back. And sometimes I feel something even stranger. Waves of emotion that aren't mine. Calm washing over me when I drift too close to panic. Comfort wrapping around me when the loneliness gets too sharp. Hope, steady and insistent, pulling me back toward consciousness every time I start to slip too far away. Lior. I realize. He's using his empathy to keep me tethered, to remind my spirit that there's something worth returning to. He's building a bridge from his heart to mine, and his father is holding us both on either side. On the 3rd day, I open my eyes. The ceiling above me is stone, ancient and elegant, carved with symbols I recognize as pack heritage marks. This isn't my cottage. This isn't anywhere I've ever been. She's waking! Father, she's... Lior's voice is high and urgent and speaking. Actually speaking for the first time in who knows how long. I turn my head. Slowly, everything feels so heavy. And there he is. The small silver cub is perched on the edge of the bed, his gray eyes enormous and shining with tears. "You came back," he whispers. "I was so scared you wouldn't come back." I try to smile at him, but I don't know if my face is cooperating. Everything feels muted, distant, wrong. "Lior, move. Let her breathe." Kaelin. I'd recognize that voice anywhere now, even though I only heard it once before. It's different now, though. Not cold. Not detached. There's warmth in it, and fear, and relief so profound it makes my chest ache. He appears above me, and I see the truth of what the villagers said. He's exhausted, dark circles under his eyes, his hair disheveled like he's been running his hands through it for days. He looks like he hasn't slept, hasn't eaten, hasn't done anything but sit by this bed and wait. "Elara," he says softly, and hearing my name in his voice for the first time does something to me. Makes me feel real again. Present. "That is your name, yes? Elara?" I nod, just barely. The village healer finally told us. After I may have threatened to let the entire village suffer without pack protection if she didn't. He says it matter-of-factly, like it's a perfectly reasonable thing to do. "You've been asleep for 3 days. The healers say physically you're fine. All your wounds are healed. Your body is healthy. But they can't explain why you won't wake up." "Lior thinks," his voice catches. "He says you lost something. Something important. He can't feel you the way he can feel everyone else." I try to speak, to explain, but nothing comes out. Not even a whisper. Not even a breath of sound. And that's when the grief hits me. It slams into me like a physical blow, stealing what little breath I have. My voice is truly gone. Not locked away, not hidden, but gone. And with it, the magic that made me who I was. The connection to the forest, to nature, to the web of life itself. I'm cut off, isolated, alone in a way I've never been alone before. Even when I was mute by choice, I still had the magic humming inside me. I still felt the pulse of life around me. Now there's just nothing. Silence. Emptiness. I'm crying before I realize it, silent tears streaming down my face. "Elara!" Kaelin reaches for me, then stops, uncertain. "Tell me how to help you. Tell me what you need." I shake my head. There's no help for this. This is what I chose. This is the price I paid. Lior makes a small, distressed sound and burrows against me, pressing his small body against my side like he can physically hold me together. And through the touch, I feel it again, that wave of emotion that isn't mine. Comfort. Safety. Love. He's still trying to give back what I gave him. Kaelin sits on the edge of the bed, moving slowly like he's afraid I'll shatter. "The healer told me some of your story, about what happened when you were a child, about why you locked your voice away." His hands clench into fists. "I'm sorry. I'm sorry you had to make that choice. I'm sorry no one was there to protect you." I just stare at him, still crying, because what can I possibly say to that? Even if I had the words, even if I could speak, I wouldn't know how to respond to this powerful man looking at me like I'm something precious and broken that he desperately wants to fix. "But Elara," he continues, his voice getting stronger, "you need to understand something. What you did, sacrificing your voice, your magic, everything, to save Lior." His eyes lock with mine, storm gray and blazing with an intensity that makes my breath catch. "That wasn't weakness. That wasn't stupidity. That was the most powerful thing I've ever witnessed." I blink at him, confused. "For 3 years," he says slowly, "I felt nothing. A sorcerer named Malachor murdered my first mate, Lyra. She wasn't. We didn't have the epic love story people imagine. It was a political alliance. But she was kind. She was hopeful. She tried to make me smile." His voice goes rough. "He killed her slowly, right in front of me, and used her death to cast a curse. He severed my ability to feel, cut me off from the emotional bonds that make a pack strong. He wanted to break me, to break us all. Lior whimpers softly, and Kaelin's hand moves to stroke his son's head, a gesture that looks like it's becoming more natural by the hour. I've been a ghost in my own life, a king ruling through cold logic and efficiency, because that's all I had left. And my son, his voice breaks. My son stopped speaking because he's an empath, and all he could feel from me was this vast, terrible emptiness. He was drowning in it. He takes my hand so carefully, like he's holding something infinitely fragile. And then you appeared, and you sang. And for the first time in 3 years, I felt something. A tear runs down his cheek. When I touched you, when I heard your song, the curse cracked. Not broke, not yet, but cracked. And I felt everything come flooding back. The pain, yes, but also hope, love, purpose. All the things Malachor tried to take from me. I'm staring at him, barely breathing. You gave your song to save my son, Kaelin says, his voice fierce now, his hand tightening around mine. Let me be your voice until you find a new one. Let me help you. Please. It's the least I can do. I don't know what to say to that. Even if I could speak, I wouldn't know what to say to that. But Lior is nodding vigorously against my side, and there's so much hope in his small face that something inside me cracks. Because they're offering me something I never thought I'd have again. Belonging. Purpose. A place in the world. So I nod. Kaelin's whole face transforms. The cold marble I saw in the clearing is gone completely, replaced by warmth and relief and something that looks dangerously close to joy. Good, he breathes. That's good. We'll figure this out together. All three of us. He glances at Lior, who is practically vibrating with happiness. I think my son has already decided your pack. And where Lior goes, I follow. Over the next few weeks, I learn what it means to be part of something again. Kaelin keeps his promise. He becomes my voice, quite literally. He has the pack's scholars teach me sign language, a complex system of gestures that the pack uses for silent hunting and battle communication. He learns it alongside me, staying up late into the night practicing until his hands move as fluently as his tongue. When I need to communicate something more complex, he sits with me while I write, and then he speaks my words to whomever needs to hear them. He never changes them, never interprets them differently. He honors every word. And slowly, I begin to find a new purpose. One day, a young warrior comes to Kaelin with a problem. His packmate is angry with him, and he doesn't understand why. Kaelin is about to dismiss it as trivial when I touch his arm and sign. Ask what happened before the anger. Ask what was said. He does. And within minutes, we've uncovered the real issue. Not anger, but fear. The packmate was afraid the warrior would be hurt in an upcoming patrol, and anger was easier to show than terror. Kaelin looks at me with something like wonder. You understand them, he says quietly. Even without feeling their emotions directly, you understand. I do. Because for 15 years, I've had nothing but observation. I've learned to read the subtle language of body and breath and silence. I've learned what people don't say. That's when Kaelin gives me a new title, Heartscribe. The one who reads the unspoken, who understands the hidden. His partner in ruling, long before I become anything else to him. The pack is suspicious at first. This strange, mute girl who came from nowhere, who sits at their king's right hand, advising him on matters they think she can't possibly understand. But Kaelin doesn't waver. Every time I offer insight, he listens. Every time I suggest a different approach, he considers it. And slowly, things begin to change. The forests grow greener. The harvests improve. The warriors smile more, fight with more coordination, because their king finally sees them as people again, not just assets. The castle itself seems to warm, as if the stones have been waiting for this, for their alpha to remember what it means to care. Lior is my constant companion. Where I go, he follows. This small silver shadow who translates my signs when Kaelin isn't near, who curls up in my lap while I write, who shares his empathic gift with me like a bridge. Through him, I feel echoes of what I lost, the joy of the pack when they celebrate, the grief when they mourn, the love that binds them all together. It's not the same as having my own connection, but it's something. It's enough. And Kalen is complicated. He's proper, always. Respectful of boundaries. He never touches me without permission. Never assumes anything beyond our working partnership. But I catch him watching me sometimes, when he thinks I'm not looking. I see the way his hand hovers near mine when we're walking, like he wants to take it, but doesn't dare. I feel the weight of his gaze when I'm signing, like he's memorizing not just my words, but every gesture, every movement. One night, 2 months after I woke up, I find him on the balcony of the castle, staring out at the forest. Lior is asleep in my quarters, a room Kalen insisted I take, one connected to his own through a shared sitting room. I should be asleep too, but the moonlight called to me. "Can't sleep?" he asks without turning around. I move to stand beside him and shake my head. "Me neither." He's quiet for a long moment. "I keep having the dream, the one with your song, but now it's different." I look at him questioningly. "Now?" he says softly. "I see your face. I see you collapsing in the clearing. I see you dying to save my son, and I can't reach you in time." His hands grip the balcony railing hard enough to make the stone creak. "Every night I watch you die, and I can't stop it. My heart aches for him. Before I can think better of it, I reach out and touch his hand." He goes very still. Then, slowly, he turns his hand over and laces his fingers with mine. "You scare me, Alara," he admits, his voice barely above a whisper. "For 3 years I felt nothing. And now, when I'm near you, I feel everything. It's overwhelming. It's terrifying." He finally looks at me, and his eyes are blazing. "And I never want it to stop." I squeeze his hand because I don't have words for this. I don't have signs that can convey the complexity of what I'm feeling, the fear, and the longing, and the sense that I'm standing at the edge of something vast and terrifying and wonderful. "I know it's too soon," he says quickly. "I know you're still healing, still finding yourself. I'm not asking for anything. I needed you to know that you matter, that you're not just the woman who saved my son, or my heart scribe, or any title I could give you. You're Alara, and that's more than enough." I stand on my toes and press my forehead to his, a gesture I've seen wolves do, a sign of trust and affection. He makes a sound low in his chest, almost a whine, and his free hand comes up to cup the back of my head. "We're going to figure this out," he murmurs against my skin. "All of it. The curse, your voice, Malachor, all of it. I promise you, Alara. I promise." I believe him. Part 4. The storm Malachor comes for us on the first night of the winter solstice. We should have known. We should have seen it coming. The increased rogue attacks, the strange sightings at the borders, the reports of a cold presence in the northern forests, all of it pointed to something building, something terrible on the horizon. But we were so focused on healing, on rebuilding, on the tentative happiness growing between us, that we missed the signs. The attack comes at midnight, when the pack is gathered in the great hall for the solstice celebration. I'm standing with Kalen at the front, Lior between us, watching the pack dance and sing. For the first time in years, they're truly celebrating, not going through the motions, but actually joyful. Then the windows explode inward. The cold that rushes in isn't natural. It's the cold of absolute zero, of the void between stars, of death itself. Wolves cry out in pain as ice forms on their fur, as their breath freezes in their lungs. And through the shattered windows steps a man who looks like he's made of winter. Malachor is tall and thin, with pale skin and eyes like chips of black ice. He's wearing robes that seem to absorb light rather than reflect it, and when he speaks, his voice echoes with wrong harmonics, like reality itself is rejecting the sound. "Alpha King Kalen Stormcrown," he says, spreading his arms wide. Look at you. Feeling again. Caring again. His smile is hideous. How disappointing. Kaelin moves instantly, placing himself between Malachor and Lior, but I can see the tremor in his hands. This is the creature who murdered his mate, who cursed him, who broke him so thoroughly it took 3 years to even begin healing. You're not welcome here, sorcerer, Kaelin growls, and his voice is pure alpha command. Around the hall, warriors are shifting, forming a protective circle around the non-combatants. Oh, retry WF continue. I think I am, Malachor counters pleasantly. After all, something here belongs to me. Something that was supposed to remain broken. His black eyes find me in the crowd, and his smile widens. Ah, there she is. The little songbird who gave away her voice. You've been very busy, haven't you? Terror floods through me, but I force myself to stand tall. I won't cower. Not from him. She has nothing to do with this, Kaelin snarls. Your quarrel is with me. On the contrary. Malachor starts walking forward, and with each step, the temperature drops further. Frost spreads across the floor, up the walls, coating everything in ice. She has everything to do with this. You see, my curse was perfect. It was designed to destroy you slowly, from the inside out. To turn your greatest strength, your ability to bond, to feel, to love, into weakness. He stops about 10 feet away, tilting his head as he studies Kaelin with the detached interest of a scientist examining an insect. But then, this little mute appears, and she sings. She pours out her soul for a cub she's never met. And somehow, his voice goes sharp, angry. Somehow, that cracks my perfect curse. How? Because you're wrong, Kaelin says quietly. The temperature drops even further. What did you say? You're wrong. Kaelin's voice is getting stronger now, more certain. You think emotion is weakness? You think caring makes us vulnerable? But you're wrong. Alara's sacrifice wasn't weakness. It was the most powerful magic I've ever seen. And the bonds she's helped me rebuild with my pack, with my son, with myself? They don't make us weaker. They make us unbreakable. Malachor's face twists with rage. Emotional drivel. Love is a leash. Compassion is a cage. Hope is a lie. I will prove it to you. He raises his hand, and suddenly the cold focuses, sharpens, becomes a spear of pure ice magic aimed directly at Lior. I move without thinking. One moment I'm standing beside Kaelin, the next I'm in front of Lior. My arms spread wide, my body a shield. The ice hits me square in the chest. Pain. Cold. My heart stuttering, trying to beat against the frost spreading through my veins. But I don't move. I won't move. Behind me, Lior is screaming and Kaelin is roaring, and the entire pack is surging forward. But Malachor just laughs. Perfect. You see, Kaelin? This is what emotion gives you. Foolish sacrifices. Pointless gestures. She can't even sing anymore, can't even fight back. And yet, she throws herself in harm's way. For what? For a child who isn't hers? For a pack that shunned her? His voice drips with contempt. Pathetic! My legs are giving out. The ice is spreading. In seconds, I'll be frozen solid. But I'm not afraid, because Malachor is wrong about one thing. I can fight back. Just not the way he expects. My hands move in the sign language Kaelin taught me, quick and desperate. One word, signed over and over as my fingers go numb with cold. Together. 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 And Kaelin understands. He moves to my side, his hand gripping mine, and Lior presses against both of us. And through that touch, something incredible happens. The curse. The one that's been slowly breaking over the past months, cracking a little more each day with every moment of connection, every second of hope, finally shatters completely. I feel it break like chains falling away, and Kaelin's roar shakes the very foundations of the castle. His power, his full alpha power, erupts from him in a wave of pure golden light that's so similar to the light I used to heal Lior that I almost cry. Because it's not his power alone. It's ours. Mine, his, Lior's, and every single member of the pack who believed, who hoped, who chose connection over isolation. The light slams into Malachor's ice, and where they meet, the air itself screams. The sorcerer's eyes go wide with shock, then narrow with fury. No, he hisses. Impossible. Emotion cannot. It can, Kaelin says, and his voice is pure command now. Pure alpha. Pure power. And it does. You taught me to survive without feeling Malachor. But Alara taught me to live again. And that makes all the difference. The golden light intensifies, and suddenly, I'm not just feeling it, I'm part of it. My lost magic, the connection I thought was gone forever, flows back into me, not from the earth or the forest, but from the bonds I've built. From Kaelin's hand in mine. From Lior's empathy bridging us all. From the pack standing behind us. Their collective strength and love and fierce protectiveness creating something that cannot be broken. This is the duet that was promised. Not a song of one voice, but a symphony of many. Malachor screams as his magic is pushed back, burned away by the light. He tries to flee, tries to dissolve into shadow, but Kaelin is faster. His warriors are faster. And the pack, united by the bonds they've rebuilt, descends on the sorcerer like a living storm. When it's over, when Malachor's dark magic is finally banished, and his physical form destroyed, the silence that falls is deafening. Then someone starts to howl. It's a howl of victory, of joy, of relief. And one by one, the entire pack joins in, until the sound is so loud, so unified, so full of life, that it makes the stars seem to sing in harmony. Kaelin pulls me against him, and Lior squirms between us, and we stand there in the center of the great hall while our pack celebrates around us. The ice is melting, warmth is returning, and the curse, all of it, every last shadow, is finally, truly gone. You're glowing, Kaelin says softly, and I realize he's right. My skin is giving off a faint, golden light, and I can feel it, the magic, returning. Not the same as before, not the solitary gift I once had, but something new, something better. The duet, the power of connection, of bonds, of choosing each other again and again. I look up at Kaelin, at this man who was broken and cold, and who learned to feel again, and I see my future in his eyes. I see belonging. I see home. And for the first time in 15 years, I open my mouth and let sound escape. It's not much. Just a single note, soft and wavering and imperfect. But it's mine. And it's enough to make Kaelin's eyes fill with tears. Ilara, he breathes. I can't say more. Not yet. My voice is still learning, still healing. But I can sign, and I do, the words I've been wanting to say for weeks now. I love you. His smile could light the entire world. I love you too, so much, more than I have words for. He leans down, his forehead against mine again. Marry me. Be my Luna. Be the heart of this pack. The way you're already the heart of everything. I don't even hesitate. I sign yes over and over, laughing silently, crying, overwhelmed with joy. Lior makes a sound that's pure happiness and shifts into his human form. A small boy with silver hair and his father's gray eyes. Does this mean you're my mother now? He asks, his voice high and hopeful. I drop to my knees and pull him into my arms, nodding fiercely. He throws his arms around my neck and squeezes tight enough to make my ribs protest, and I've never felt anything more perfect in my life. Pack! Kaelin's voice rings out, commanding attention. Let me introduce you to your Luna, Alara Stormcrown, Heartscribe, Healer, and the woman who saved us all. The roar of approval nearly deafens me, but I'm laughing too hard to care. Epilogue. The New Symphony. 1 year later, I stand on the same balcony where Kalen first told me I scared him, and I watch the sun set over a forest that's greener and more alive than it's been in a decade. My voice has returned, slowly and imperfectly. I can speak in short sentences now, can hum simple melodies. I'll never sing the way I once did. That gift is still gone, transformed into something new. But I have the duet. I have the ability to feel the pack's emotions through our bond, to send comfort and strength through nothing but a touch and a thought. I have Leor's empathy, supplementing my own understanding, creating a connection so deep that I sometimes can't tell where I end and they begin. And I have Kalen. He comes up behind me now, wrapping his arms around my waist, pulling me back against his chest. Copper for your thoughts, my Luna. I tilt my head back to look at him, just remembering. Remembering what? The girl I was. The one who was so afraid of being heard that she locked herself into silence. I turn in his arms, placing my hand over his heart. I don't think she could have imagined this. I don't think the man I was could have either, he admits. I was so cold, Alara, so empty, and you filled all those empty spaces with light. We filled them together, I correct gently. That's the whole point. He smiles and leans down to kiss me, slow and sweet and full of promise. When he pulls back, his eyes are soft. Leor wants to know if you'll read to him tonight. He says your voice is the one that makes the nightmares stay away. My heart swells. Of course. We go inside together, and I find Leor, who shifts between forms so easily now, confident in both his wolf and human shapes, curled up in the sitting room with a book that's nearly as big as he is. Mother, he says, and I'll never get tired of hearing that word. Will you read the one about the brave healer? That's every story we read, Kalen points out with amusement. No, the one where she saves everyone by being kind instead of powerful. I settle onto the couch, and Leor immediately climbs into my lap while Kalen sits beside us, his arm around my shoulders. And I begin to read in my quiet, imperfect voice about a girl who learned that the greatest power isn't in grand gestures or legendary magic, but in the choice to love fiercely, to sacrifice selflessly, and to believe that connection is stronger than any curse. Halfway through, Leor falls asleep, and I carefully move him to his own room. When I return, Kalen is standing by the window, looking out at the pack village below, where lights are beginning to glow in the windows. They're happy, he says quietly. For the first time in years, they're truly happy. I move to stand beside him, and he takes my hand automatically, that gesture so natural now that neither of us thinks about it. So am I whisper. He looks at me, and in his eyes, I see everything we've built together. The trust, the love, the future we're creating one day at a time. So am I, my heart. So am I. And as the stars begin to appear above Silver Vale, as the pack settles in for another peaceful night, as our son sleeps safe, and our bond hums with contentment, I finally understand the truth. I didn't lose my voice that day in the clearing. I traded it for something infinitely more valuable. I traded a solo song for a symphony, isolation for belonging, survival for love. And I would make that choice again, every single time. Because some sacrifices aren't losses, they're transformations. And this family, this pack, this love, is the most beautiful transformation of all. The end.